In the New Testament, the resurrection of Jesus is described in a couple of ways. There are the stories in which Jesus' tomb is found empty. There are also the accounts of the risen Jesus where he appears to his disciples in various situations. And it has been observed that the different ways these collected stories and accounts are told depends on the audience. Sometimes the audience is the world. The resurrection is shared as public witness, good news that other people out there, everyone, needs to know about. And in these accounts, it is always the apostles who share what has happened, the authoritative public figures of the early church. We have some great examples of what I'm talking about right here in our first two readings this morning. First of all, from the book of Acts, St. Peter says, God raised Jesus on the third day and allowed him to appear not to all people, but to us who were chosen by God as witnesses. Similarly, St. Paul, to whom the risen Jesus appeared on the Damascus Road, offers up another example of this category in our passage that you heard from 1 Corinthians. Paul says authoritatively and bluntly, in fact, Christ has been raised from the dead. St. Paul says it, the church believes it. The resurrection accounts in this category are like the official public statements of the church, and the audience is the world. But there is a second category of resurrection accounts where the intended audience is you. It is me, the church itself. These are the stories about the initial shock and bewilderment of the empty tomb. And they feature characters who are not named among the apostles of the church. They feature the women disciples. Each of the four evangelists shares that the first to encounter the empty tomb were women. And these empty tomb stories are less like official public proclamations than they are like our own internal wrestling with the resurrection and what it means. Again, the audience is we here in the church itself. So you'll remember earlier in the Gospels where Jesus asks his disciples two questions. Who do others say that I am? And they give a number of responses. And then he asks, who do you say that I am? So similarly, the church today says, this is what the resurrection is. This is what it means. And the preacher may stand right here and offer up some sensible, creedal, theological explanation. But you may leave with the question still lingering. But what do I say it means in my particular life? And so that second question is where I want us lingering this morning. For we are with the women at the empty tomb in Luke's gospel. You know the outline of the story very well. Early morning on the first day of the week, women disciples come to the tomb with spices to properly prepare Jesus' body for burial in a way that time prevented on Good Friday. Three of them are named toward the end of the account: Mary Magdalene, Joanna, Mary, the mother of James. The other women go nameless. They discover that the stone covering the tomb has been rolled away. The body is absent. Then they are shocked by the appearance of two angels announcing that Jesus is raised from the dead. So they hear the proclamation. But what does it really mean for them? Easter morning is not simply announcing and explaining that Jesus is raised from the dead. It is to enter into that space with these women between the proclamation and the personal impact. Again, that is where I want us to situate ourselves right now. What if this story really is true? What would that really mean for me? What is it to be confronted suddenly, with the end of one world, while not yet knowing what the new world holds for us. I read this resurrection account each and every day for more than a week now, and each time I've read it, I've been struck by the same two words. The women were first perplexed, and then they were terrified. They understand immediately that something utterly unexpected and terribly unsettling has occurred. They do not understand immediately what this will mean for them. Again, we ourselves do well this Easter morning to try to worm our way into that space with them. What is it like? What is it like to be in this space of perplexity, if not fearfulness, over where we stand in relation to the lives we're currently living, in relation to God? Well, I have to imagine that in church pulpits all over the world this Easter day, preachers are mentioning the fire that ravaged the Cathedral of Notre Dame in Paris this past week. I actually felt sick to my stomach when I pulled up the live coverage on my computer of that fire on Monday afternoon, just incredulous, seeing raging flames flaring out of the central nave area of that awe-inspiring Christian monument dating back to the 12th century. With so many all over the world, I watched in horror as the iconic Gothic tower collapsed into the midst of the conflagration. In some ways, watching all of this was like watching the horror of 9/11, though thanks be to God, without the terrorism and the loss of life. And also, thanks be to God, while the damage is enormous, we have learned later in the week that Notre Dame is not a total loss. It can be, and we are told will be, restored. But the question is precisely why? I thought some social commentators were too quick to pounce on this tragedy as a painful but clear sign of the times. The burning of one of the greatest Christian centers in all of Western civilization, a fitting symbol of the death of the church in secular and decrepit Europe. And how fitting that it happened at the beginning of Holy Week. Well, I don't know if I would have written that. Some others, notably Christian commentators, were quick with a kind of, the phoenix will rise from the ashes take. The gospel is not buildings and cathedrals, it's not the institution of the church, and nothing can kill the gospel, not even a terrible fire like that. Well, of course. But I think what I saw and many others saw was a little different than those two takes. Maybe it is my own projection, my own wish dreams, interpreting what I want to interpret in images that I observed last Monday with that fire in Paris. But others have written about it and observed what I'm about to share. And it is this. The thousands of Parisians who flocked to the scene upon obviously hearing the news that Notre Dame was on fire, to watch, to take in the enormity of what was happening before their very eyes. I looked at a lot of photographs, a lot of video from Monday in Paris. The bystanders on the bridges, holding hands, the looks on their faces. To me, these were not the looks of rubberneckers or curiosity seekers. Nor were they the looks of people distraught over the burning of a national treasure, a proud cultural icon. Somehow I discerned that the reaction to Notre Dame in flames represented a different kind of experience than if, for example, the Louvre had caught on fire, as horrible as that would be too, of course. No, this was more than a historical and artistic and cultural loss. No, those faces told the story of something lost that was not fully known to be lost until it was seen going up in flames. Maybe I don't know what I'm talking about. Not being there, not being European, not being French, not being an atheist, not being a non-believer. But another commentator put it very well, better than I can. Quote, "The fascinating thing to me is the mourning of something lost that only came to some consciousness in the light of the burning flames." End quote. All those faces watching. Something lost after decades of marinating in secularizing ideologies, perhaps not entirely lost after all. The desire for God. The desire for God. And maybe that is what was so poignantly perplexing for those watching Notre Dame in flames. People realized they missed God in their lives after all. Yes, they may be spiritually dead, but maybe God is not dead. Otherwise, why all the widely reported stories of people saying it was a spiritual experience to watch that fire? What is it that we miss when we aren't quite sure what we miss, but we nevertheless intuit a space, a gap, a hole in our lives and in the world? What we miss, perhaps, actually is a lingering presence of sorts. The living God poised, perhaps, yet again to do a new thing. More than 100 years ago, Evelyn Underhill was not speaking of secular Europe, nor was she speaking of nominal Christian Americans when she wrote that in the ordinary course of events, the world resists Easter, she wrote, with the exasperating calmness of a large animal that refuses to get up. The heavy animal is diseased as well as indolent. So that being the case, at least with me, it is God who will do the raising. As he did for Jesus, God's resurrection power works still to bring the dead to life in ways great and dramatic and in ways that may seem very, very small, at least at first. For here we all are. All of us raised out of our beds and homes to come here, I trust, not simply as spectators to a cultural inheritance, paying our respects to this religious holiday or fulfilling a family expectation. But rather, we are here because God has raised up in each of us the deep down awareness of the space in our lives between our experience of pleasant enough existence and abundant life, between knowledge of our sinful brokenness and the assurance of forgiveness, between our fear of getting sick and aging and dying and the hope of resurrection life. With the women at the empty tomb, we enter this morning into that sacred space. Between the mysterious realities of he is not here and he is risen. And perhaps we live a lot of our lives between those two worlds. Well, take heart. Those first to discover the empty tomb did not immediately get it either, did not immediately experience any particular transformation that is described other than bewilderment. Jesus is risen. That changes everything. And on behalf of the Church of Christ, I proclaim it to you as one who is authorized to do so. But even more than that, my deepest hope is that something in this day inspires you, inspires all of us to wrestle with what this really means. for yourself. What is it that we miss when we are aware we have lost something we cannot quite name, but nevertheless yearn for? What if God is poised right there now in that question? What if the God who raised Jesus from the dead has so much more in store for you as well?